This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that.
Yeah.
No hassle.
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on King of OX.
Back at it on a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX, broadcasting from Jupiter, Florida, and at Cardinals Spring Training. We are into hour number two of the program. We've got a bunch of interviews coming up. We're going to speak with Lynn Worthy from the Post-Dispatch in just a moment. Then his Post-Dispatch STL Today colleague Daniel Guerrero will join us. And then our good pal Mike Claiborne joins us this hour as well. So we've got a lot to get to here in what is our final hour of Sports Open Line, originating from Florida. Again, tomorrow night, countdown to opening day show. And then on Friday, we will have Cardinals baseball on during this time. So with that, let's bring on Lynn Worthy, who's in a little bit of a different role card to covering Cardinals spring training this year. Previously, he had been a Cardinals beat writer. He recently made the move to a columnist, so he's covering a lot more than Cardinals baseball. But he's down here at spring training, back in his familiar territory here for at least a little while. Lynn, always great to see you. Thanks for taking some time. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me.
How different is it for you? Because I know you've covered other sports in your career, but you've been a baseball guy for a while, covered the Royals, came here, did a great job covering the Cardinals. How odd has it been for you that you're just now getting to spring training and you were not here for the first few weeks of it?
It was weird. It was weird, like, you know, coming in the middle of things. You know, I mean, you're usually here even before some of the players. So now to come in, games have already started, guys have all reported. Like, it's in the middle of, almost coming in midstream. It's a little bit weird, but I'm not mad about the weather.
What's your general takeaway on what you've kind of seen from afar from this spring? Obviously, there was the Arenado stuff at the beginning of spring. There's been a couple injuries here recently. Good news today on Jordan Walker. But outside of the Arenado stuff at the beginning, it's been kind of a quiet, boring spring training, I think.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of what I expected. I mean, like, all the talk this offseason was about creating room for some of these guys that they've, like, you know, they had high hopes for, that you've seen glimpses of, that you've seen, you know, spurts, fits and starts of, like, what they could be. It was all about giving those guys, like, you know, room to show what they could do this season. So it's like, everybody, or I shouldn't say everybody, but, like, you know, you see people who are talking about, oh, they didn't sign this guy, they didn't do that, and it's like, they sort of told you in the beginning that this is what it was going to look like. I mean, you probably could have added a couple pieces, you know, depending on if they move some salary, like the, you know, the Arenado thing. Maybe they do one or two other things. But for the most part, the core of the team, like, it was going to be running it back and giving guys some chances to play. So I wasn't really surprised by that. This is sort of what I expected.
At this point of the spring training, everything is a tiny sample size. The offensive numbers haven't been especially good. The underlying numbers, hard hit rate, things like that, for the most part, have been pretty good. What do you put more stock in?
I mean, to me, it's still so early. Like, numbers can, and like you said, small sample size, so the numbers can change so fast. So it's like, you know, Ivan Herrera, like, oh, he's struggling at the plate. Then we come out here today, he hits two line drives, and I don't know what the average is up to, but all of a sudden it's like, oh, that looks a lot different, you know. And And even, you know, I mean, I was just working on something, a column on Mason Wynn, and I think back to last year because, you know, I had the conversation with him last year. He was talking about the approach that he was working on. I watched him in the batting cage, and he could explain to you exactly what he was trying to do. You would see it in the batting cage, and it just didn't really translate into games. But then, was it, I think, April or the first through the first month and then into May, he was hitting 300. So, I mean, like, he knew what he was doing. He knew what he was trying to work on. It didn't translate into games. And you start the season saying, oh, this might be rough. And then it clicks. And exactly the things that he'd been working on carried over into games. So, I mean, I'm not saying that it works that way every time. But, I mean, I'm not going to freak out over, you know, 15 at-bats. Or, I mean, I think Wynn was 0 for 18 going into that hit that he finally got the other day. And so, I mean, yeah, you keep track of it and you keep an eye on it, but I mean, I wouldn't start sounding alarms yet.
Wynn's a guy who at least he's got the track record of last season. This is his sophomore year. We'll see what happens there. But for guys like Nolan Gorman and Jordan Walker, who have not yet put together really a full major league season, we've seen glimpses from both of them. Walker a couple years ago, Gorman has had some good numbers in his major league time, but they have a hard time putting it together. What do you want to see from those guys here in spring?
You know, for me, I mean, and I got here just a couple of days ago, but I got here in time. Like, so Jordan, it's the last game before yesterday when he got hurt, had a couple of, like, hard hit balls, line drives to the outfield. I mean, one of them was a diving catch. One of them was, you know, smoked right at somebody. I mean, like, if he's doing that, you know, like, making the type of contact, having the type of at-bats, driving the ball, like, I mean, whether it's caught or not, I mean, I'm not too worried about that. But if he's doing that and he's going to be able to do that consistently, then you're fine. Gorman, you know, I think he had a hit the other day that looked pretty good. And I think even today, he's, you know, it's the type of at-bats, it's the type of contact, it's, you know, and then are they able to do it consistently? It's not so much the offer, you know, whatever. It's are they starting to get to a point where it looks the same, it looks good, and it's looking that way on a consistent basis? To me, it's more so that than, you know, what their batting average is through spring training, you know, when you got all sorts of variables and different things like that.
Walker's injury, he stepped on a sprinkler head a little bit awkwardly, twisted his knee or jammed his knee a bit, but we found out from Oliver Marmol, probably going to be about a week or so of him not doing baseball activities, and then he's going to ramp up again after that. All things considered, I guess that's pretty good news.
Yeah. I mean, if you were looking at some extended period of time, you know, some sort of a setback, something like that, or a serious injury, then it'd be like, oh, man, it's going to put him back when this was going to be a big year. This was going to be a year for him to show things. This is, you know, it seemed like he was really excited working with the new hitting coach Brent Brown. So, like, a significant amount of time, you say, well, maybe this sets him back, but a week during spring training, like, you know, if he gets off to this type of start that, you know, like he did that rookie year, or it's a hitting streak, or if he just gets off to a hot start, nobody's going to remember that he missed a week in March. So, I mean, it's all in all, it's probably, you know, the best case scenario for any type of injury.
We're talking with Lynn Worthy, Post-Dispatch, STL Today, former Cardinals beat writer. Now you're reading him as a columnist. He'll be doing a lot of Cardinal stuff. He has been and will continue to do so now that he's down here in Florida for a little while. How much have you enjoyed, though, looking at some of the other sports and getting to know that a little bit better?
Oh, it's been fun. I mean, it takes me back to, you know, like the first newspaper job I had. We did a little bit of everything. So it was, you know, colleges, professional sports, maybe even some youth sports. It was, you know, high schools. It was different levels, different sports, a little bit of everything. And so it's sort of like getting back to that. I mean, even some of the stuff, like, I hadn't covered hockey in a few years, but I'd covered it years ago. I mean, I've covered, you know, I covered college basketball pretty extensively for a period of time, and I hadn't covered it for years. So going back over to, like, you know, a SLU game was sort of, it was weird, but also sort of like, oh, okay, I remember this. And then you sort of, like, fall back into old habits. So it was, it's been cool. And it's also given me, you know, a chance to see some of the athletic things, or some of the sports that are sort of synonymous with St. Louis, aside from the Cardinals, that I didn't really get that much time to spend at, whether that's a Blues game or, you know, things like that. So it's been pretty cool.
I don't know if you would agree, but we're in a really interesting time for us in media, because I think the leaders of these individual teams give us all the time we need, have well thought out answers. You talk about Oliver Marmol, but now you get to work with Jim Montgomery and Josh Schertz and Anthony Beck, the Battle Hawks coach. I mean, it's a bunch of coaches, managers, leaders in the area who I feel like are pretty good at using us in the media to be able to fully explain things to people who listen, read, whatever it might be.
Yeah, I mean, so far I haven't had any knock on wood, adversarial sort of interactions or anything like that. I mean, it seems like for the most part they understand, you know, what our job is, and they understand that they want to communicate, you know, to people who, you know, follow the team, fans, people who maybe just follow the sport. So, I mean, so far it seems like they everybody you named that I've had interactions with, I think everybody, at least to some extent, whether it's even just like on the Zoom call with, you know, the Battlehawks, seems to be pretty good about wanting to communicate with us or through us for people who follow the sport and follow their teams.
He is Lynn Worthy. You read him in the Post-Dispatch and STL Today. Again, he is now a sports columnist. He is down here in Florida covering the Cardinals from now to the end of spring training. Lynn, great to see you. Thanks for the time.
Thank you very much.
That's Lynn Worthy from the Post-Dispatch and STL Today. We appreciate him taking a few moments with us. When we return, his colleague Daniel Guerrero is set to join us. We got a lot. This is a really, really busy hour of the show. Daniel joins us in just a moment. It's a Graybar Sports Open Line from Florida and Cardinal Spring Training on KMOX.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Reese Crosby. If you enjoy football, and brotherly banter, be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys.
Here's some stories from my NFL playing days, goofy conversations about everyday life, giving you entertaining lessons on the pitches across the pond, fun, relatable guests, and what it means to live life on purpose.
New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday. Be sure to subscribe to Kicking It with the Crosbys on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX from Jupiter, Florida. Cardinals spring training into our final hour of the show, as we're glad to be able to provide for you a few conversations that we've had. We're going back-to-back with some colleagues over at the Post-Dispatch and STL Today. Very happy after having Lynn Worthy on in our last segment. Let's bring on Daniel Guerrero. Going into his first year fully on the Cardinals beat, he'd been covering the Cardinals, but also with a focus on Cardinals prospects in recent years, but with Lynn going over to the columnist role, Daniel, along with Derek Gould, are now the two beat writers covering the Cardinals on an everyday basis. You follow Daniel on Twitter at the Dan Guerrero. With that, let's welcome Daniel on to the program. Great to see you. Thank you for taking some time with us today. How are you?
I'm doing good, Matt. A beautiful day out here, and always great to talk to you, so thanks for the invite.
Yeah, we're. I think we've talked to you since you had the role change. Maybe we haven't. It all kind of runs together, but you're in a little bit of a new role this
this year. You focused so much on prospects in recent years, but now with Lynn moving over to a columnist role, you've got a full beat writer's job while still doing the prospect stuff. So there's a lot on your plate.
I'm thankful for the opportunity. I'm part of a great team at the Post-Dispatch, and I'm excited to still continue to bring prospect coverage to be on the big league beat fully, and be here for the full spring training and get to go on a few road games this year. I'm really looking forward to, but just kind of trying to bring the best coverage to our readers. So just any way I can do that, I'll be happy with.
Has it been fun for you? Again, you still have a focus on prospects, but now you and you've done big league stuff before, but the fact that your focus is able to be more on the big league team, have you enjoyed that?
Yeah, I think it's that's been one of the cool aspects. I still enjoy it. I love doing the prospect stuff and kind of being a somebody who can kind of introduce like these guys, who are kind of new to the system or, new to pro ball. But doing big league stuff also kind of has its cool things because you're, instead of, a lot of times I feel like, you're telling kind of readers about like the future and kind of guys who are coming through, but like here are the guys who are here now and guys who we're watching on a daily basis. And I think that's probably one of the cool aspects that I do enjoy.
The camp, it's kind of been a quiet, workmanlike type of camp. Has anything especially stuck out to you about what we've seen so far in the first half of camp?
I'm still thinking about Wilson Contreras' homer the other day that almost cleared the batter's eye here at Roger Dean. Just as far as like overall tone of camp, I guess I can stick with Wilson. Him playing first base, and I think one of the things that you see, and as we're kind of seeing here sitting from the stands, is kind of the personality he brings to the infield work. And that energy, that's something that Alec Burleson kind of talked about as being a big part of moving to first base for him, for Wilson and for Alec. I think seeing Wilson Contreras kind of become, still remain here and be that vocal leader, that vocal veteran in the clubhouse, that's been something unique to watch. And I think one of the other things that has stuck out just on an individual basis is really J.J. Weatherholt's presence in camp so far. He got off to a strong start in the Grapefruit League, homered in his first game, and has been a constant around here, and Cardinals had their first wave of cuts and reassignments to minor league camp, and Weatherholt's still here, and he's going to get a good look and play shortstop and get some at-bats. So, it's a cool look into the future for the Cardinals' top prospect.
On the timeline on Weatherholt, do you think there's a scenario where maybe he gets on that Mason Wynn timeline where there's a possibility he spends a couple, 2-3 weeks on the big league club at the end of the season?
Oh, that's an interesting look. And I think a big part of it will be where the Cardinals are, at the end of the year, this year, and in the season. Maybe that is a part of it where, this guy is doing really good in the minor leagues, hit the upper minor league levels, and you need a bat to play the middle infield. But I would say that I think Weatherholt could be on a quicker path to the majors, given his experience in college, given just sort of his ceiling and kind of talents that he already has and the tools that he already has with him as his prospect. He was a number 7 overall pick for a reason, and guys go that high, tend to move quickly. And I think seeing him in high A to begin the year is a really likely scenario, and after that he dictates his own timeline of how quickly he advances. I think he could get into double A pretty quickly, and if he's already there, we've seen the Cardinals really zoom guys up the system, and we've seen it with Mason, like you mentioned. We've seen it with Jordan Walker, we've seen it with Victor Scott, and maybe Weatherholt kind of has a tool set to be a guy that could be on that same path.
We're talking with Daniel Guerrero from the Post-Dispatch and STL today. We were just in a conversation with Ollie, and it feels like the narrative here over the last few days has kind of moved to the team's baseball card numbers offensively not good, the advanced numbers, a lot of guys hitting the ball hard, things like that. How do you assess where this team is at from an offensive standpoint, where the numbers that most people pay attention to don't look great right now?
Yeah, that's an interesting way to look at it, right? Because the box score is what determines the score of the game, right? Because if guys aren't getting hits and not scoring runs, then you're going to lose games. I wouldn't put too much value in wins and losses in spring training because, guys are only playing parts of the games. I do value the advanced numbers because the metrics are there. Sometimes you hit into bad luck, but if the quality of contact's there, obviously that's a good sign. It's still, I think, a little early to be, kind of sounding the alarm of, guys aren't hitting. But you can't ignore you know, Mason Wynn hasn't gotten a hit yet. Nolan Gorman has one hit. Von Herrera hasn't had a hit yet. So, I mean, there are guys. Brendan Donovan's another one who's been a little slow to start. And I think what we saw the other day out of Jordan Walker is probably like a good example of the way the Cardinals are looking at it, or Ollie Marmol's looking at it, right, where Jordan Walker has a sack fly on a line drive, has a deep fly ball to the left, you know, a couple hard hit balls the other day, but doesn't really have any box score numbers to show. I think as guys continue to get at bats here in the next week and kind of work through their approach, work through their mechanics, I think quality of contact will be definitely something to watch. But I think as we get deeper into spring, yeah, you would like to see, you know, some box score results and those averages tick up and those OPS numbers tick up.
From a competition standpoint, we'll see what happens with Michael McGreevy. He's kind of on the outside looking in. Bunch of guys competing for spots in the bullpen, guys competing for the final, you know, spots on the bench, four or five guys kind of in there. Is there a battle from a position group standpoint, even center field with Scott and Ciani? What is there anything that you're really taking note of?
I'm also looking at the catching spot, right, where we have Ivan Herrera and Pedro Páez, you know, primed to be the Cardinals' catching tandem in the major leagues. And, you know, somebody's got to start on opening day. Somebody's got to take majority of the reps if it's not a true split. We, you know, I've seen them kind of go back and forth, alternate games. But that's another one that I'm looking at. I think it's one of those things where it's going to come down to what the Cardinals are going to value just in terms of what they offer, right? We've seen Ivan Herrera show some strong, I mean, box score and advanced metrics at the plate at the major league level. We've seen Pedro Páez, you know, call a good game. We've seen him, you know, in what he offers and, you know, kind of the framing of framing game when it comes to, you know, balls and strikes. I think one of those guys is going to, you know, have to step up and kind of make up for the parts of the game that, you know, they've kind of lacked a little bit in a sense. I think that's going to be kind of the deciding factor of what the Cardinals decide on who's going to be the opening day starter and maybe who could become the primary starter if it's not a traditional, I guess, split.
Last thing for you, because you have such a good eye on prospects and player development. We know that this team is going through this period where they're redoing the player development system. Most of that work is going to get done after spring training ends and everything. But have you noticed anything, whether it's from an instruction standpoint, anything? Has anything stuck out to you from what you've seen maybe on the backfields that are maybe a little bit different this year?
I think just the staffing and in terms of the coaches, minor league instructors that they have, that was one of the big things that the Cardinals did this offseason, was just add additional resources in terms of just people power for these prospects. That was something that, you know, they really did lack. I mean, there's positions and coordinators that they have that they didn't have specific rules for before. I mean, having a catching coordinator and Ethan Goforth is a big one. Jose LaHare, who was a minor league manager in Double A the last few years and, you know, led that team to, you know, some winning seasons and playoff appearances, now is assistant field coordinator and a base running coordinator, which they didn't have. They didn't have a base running coordinator, at least a dedicated one. And I think that that's kind of the big thing, where you have guys who have specific roles and are dedicated to different things, and you have players who now can work with individuals instead of, you know, kind of leaning on a couple of coaches or instructors to kind of handle that workload. And that's a huge thing for not just the player side, but the coaching side, to kind of really sink your teeth into one thing and, you know, and help a guy develop and grow in that area.
He is Daniel Guerrero. Read him in the Post-Dispatch, STL Today. Derek Gould, Benjamin Hopkins down here, Lynn Worthy's here right now. They've just done an amazing job on their coverage of the Cardinals. Daniel, thanks for the time.
Yeah, thank you, Matt.
That's Daniel Guerrero from the Post-Dispatch and STL Today. When we return, Mike Claiborne will join us for a few moments. It's a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX.
It's a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. Welcome back into the program. Continuing to come your way from Jupiter, Florida, and Cardinals spring training. You've heard us together every week on the Countdown to Opening Day show, but haven't gotten the chance to bring them on to Sports Open Line here since spring training got started. So with me getting back to St. Louis here in a couple days, let's get this done. Happy to welcome Mike Claiborne on to the show. Hey, Claibs.
Well, it's nice to see you again. So are we talking baseball or everything else is going on in the world of sports?
We'll talk some baseball if that's all right with you.
Yeah. I talk enough, baby. No, I'm just kidding. Whatever you want to talk about. But there is a, this is kind of a fun time of the year where you have spring training games. Players are starting to emerge. New names and faces are starting to come about. You know, the injury issue. It's amazing how nobody's talking about trades at this point because everyone's trying to figure out who they are. And then you look at college basketball. The tournament is about to start. And I don't know about you, but I think it's going to be wide open again. I think you have maybe four teams that can get there. And I think everybody else is kind of a wild card. The NFL is kind of crazy. The salary cap and guys are going to start spending money once again with free agency. And the franchise tag has been lifted on some players. And then here come the Blues. The trade deadline is on Friday. And, you know, you ask yourself the question, what do you have? What do you need? And does anybody have an interest in anything you have? So, fun time to be in sports, and so I got it all out of my system.
You mentioned college basketball. I don't know if there's a great team. We saw Auburn lose the other day to Texas A&M. Duke's good. Tennessee's good. I mean, there's teams there in the top five spots, but to your point, I don't know. If you're not just a great team, and I don't think there's a great team out there, it is wide open. And if you get hot and you go on a run, anybody can win this thing.
I don't think there's a such thing as a great team now because of the portal, the NIL, and the movement within college sports. It's hard to put that many players together for one run because normally they're off somewhere else after the following year. So coaching and keeping it simple is really one of the strong suits you have to have as a coach. Along with, if you don't have a guy who's a JUCO coach on your staff who knows how to quick coach guys, it's really hard to win. And this year, I think you're seeing teams start to shift in that direction, keeping it simple and relying on players to, A, have a good mental processing skill, along with applying their athletic skill as far as conditioning and just overall ball awareness and how you make that turn out to something that's going to be successful you and your program.
I bet Brad Underwood would probably agree with you on the JUCO thing. He was down at Daytona for a while as the head coach. Corey Tate for SLU. So the point about having guys on the staff that can quickly get guys together, that's a nice skill set to have on a staff.
It really is. And, you know, to build a program to say what this young man looks like in 3 years, better worry about what he looks like at the end of this year and be able to be in a position to re-recruit him because the NIL thing has just become such a factor. Now, the question I've always come into play is, you know, when a guy goes in the portal, why? Is he not good enough? Is he not getting enough playing time? Is he getting run off? Did somebody make him a better offer? I mean, there's a lot of reasons on why guys are in the portal, and some of them aren't ones that you want to inherit. And so I think the character issue comes into play. And I'm sure with the size of these coaching staffs today, there's a guy, all he does is sit there and evaluate character. And is he a coachable person? And what did you hear about him? What do you know about him? Does he go to class? I mean, there's so many things that go into that, that the head coach, there just isn't enough time in a day for him to be able to sift through this one-on-one with every player. He has to be given information on whether this applies to the success of the program or not. And I think it's harder now to coach than it's ever been.
There's a lot of things impacting college basketball from a negative standpoint. One of the things I see, I'm not upset about NIL and, you know, portal and money and so forth, but what does concern me is guys are getting more money going across the street as opposed to staying at their own place, because that's just the way things work. If people leave jobs, they leave jobs to go make more money at a different place. At some point, these teams are going to have to find a way to be matching the offers of other schools, or you're just going to have guys walking across the street every single year.
Well, yeah, I agree with you. And they are doing it now, but I really feel that at this point, there has to be more uniformity with regard to the ability to move from one program to another. Maybe there ought to be a uniform contract that everybody abides by, because, you know, you've seen players that think they're going to get paid this and they don't get paid. They want to all of a sudden up the ante. There's so many sidebars to how this thing is working that eventually we're going to see this thing in court. I would imagine we'll see some sort of legislation. That's if the NCAA can keep it together. I personally don't think they will, because I think the Power Five conferences or the big boys are going to walk away from this thing sooner than they think. I wouldn't be surprised to hear more rumblings at the end of the Final Four. I really think we're at that point now where they kind of know that they can't sustain this pace. So why don't we just circle our wagons, put in some legitimate rules that everybody will feel comfortable with, and move on.
All right, let's talk a little baseball. And I think one of the biggest narratives of the past week was trying to figure out what's real from an offensive standpoint, because the Cardinals have struggled with their baseball card numbers, the batting average, the home runs, the RBIs, the runs scored, the OPS, things like that. But people will be quick to tell you that the underlying numbers, the exit velos, the things like that are all looking really good. Generally, over large sample size claims, that leads to good baseball card numbers, still a tiny sample size. How do you kind of view all that when you do have a team that's not doing what you want them to do offensively?
I think you have to first look at the day on the calendar and who has an advantage. Pitchers are a little bit ahead of the hitters. You also have to take a look at an approach. Some guys want to look at pitches coming out of a pitcher's hand because they've been watching it come out of a pitching machine for the last 3 months. So it's a growing process. It takes about 3 weeks, 3 weeks worth of at-bats to really know what you have. And we're in week two, and you'll see some guys who are making some subtle adjustments. And next week, you'll see them truly apply, as are the pitchers. Pitchers are going to work on their stuff a little bit more. We're not going to be pumping fastballs. We're going to be throwing changeups. We're going to throw sliders. We're going to throw pitches that we can see if we can get swing and miss on. We're going to throw pitches we see if we can keep it on the ground. So that adjustment phase will take place also. So I really believe that week three is really the telltale mark of what you have. And if he's not doing it, then you have to figure out what plan B is. If he is doing it, then you have to say, how can we make sure we keep him at a good, consistent pace? And if he's still trying to figure it out, you have to decide what are our options with regard to this position and what this person's role is going to be within the organization.
Yeah, a couple guys collected their first hits of spring this past week, and Mason Wynn and Nolan Gorman. Those guys are in two very different spots. Wynn, I think there's all the confidence in the world that he's going to be fine. He's just working on some things. He's trying to identify pitches. Where Gorman, we still don't for sure know if the adjustments and the tweaks that he has made to a swing, whether that's going to play out in the big leagues.
I would agree with you. This is a work in progress. I mean, he's gotten off to a tough start. And the same way he was getting himself out last year, the same way he's getting himself out this year. So in talking to Brant Brown and trying to reinstill some different values and just a different approach, it's going to take some time. And here's the other thing. It's not like you have five third basemen standing over there waiting to take a spot. I mean, this is an organization that may be a little short on third basemen within themselves, and I don't blame them. You know, you have Arenado, and you had Nolan Gorman, and you thought these between the two would be your third baseman for the next 10, 15 years. Well, I don't know if that's going to be the case or not. So you almost are in a position where you want to sink or swim. Now, I know you can say, well, what about this guy? What about none of those guys are legitimate third basemen. They can play it, but the productivity from a defense and offensive standpoint is not what you would like to circle every year as far as expectations are concerned.
Let me finish you off with this. We'll talk hockey for just a quick second. Coming up on the trade deadline, do you believe in what the Blues have done recently, where they went into a bit of a hot streak, or is this a team that maybe uses the deadline to move some of their marquee players?
Who are their marquee players? That'd be my first question to you.
A Bennington, a Shen, a Thomas, a Kyrou.
You know, the question is, who's in dire need for a goalie? You know, Bennington has a very comfortable contract. Is he a difference maker? There's no doubt. Is he a money player? There's no doubt. What are you looking for in return is the bigger question, because the Blues are stacking prospects. And at some point, prospects are going to have to be evaluated to be either that or suspects. And right now, there's a lot of guys that we just don't know about. You probably need some more experience on this on hockey club as well. So I'm just not sure, because to move people around, you basically are raising the flag of surrender for this year, and you don't want to go 3 years in a row without making the playoffs. I think that's something that really is going to be tough for Blues fans to swallow. But then again, you don't want to mortgage your farm just to get in one round in. So it's a catch-22. Damned if you do, damned if you don't. And I'm not sure if there's a wrong answer here, but I just think fans want to see some sort of movement. We have been conditioned between the Cardinals and the Blues, when the deadline rolls around, we're going to do something. And I don't think that's going to be any different this year. There may be some smaller deals made, I think, but nothing along the line where, whoa, get the names ready to put it on a cup. I'm not sure if that deal is out there for the Blues, but I would like to see them do something.
Claves, appreciate the time. You and I have a countdown to opening day coming up tomorrow night.
We sure do, and I'm looking forward to talking to you about that. That's going to be a fun show. We've talked to a few of those people already, and I would suggest to everybody who wants to be updated on some things you haven't heard a great deal about, tomorrow night is where you're going to find them, right here on KMOX.
We will take a break. Have more in just a moment. This is the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Starting to wrap up this edition of a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauley, coming your way from Jupiter, Florida. Before we get out of here, let's do some fun with audio and listen into a little bit of what Cardinals manager Oliver Marmol had to say after tonight's game, or this afternoon's game, where the Cardinals lose to the Astros by a 6-5 score in walk-off fashion. Should be noted that they had a lead going to the bottom of the eighth. Houston scored two in the bottom of the eighth to tie it, and then got the one run in the bottom of the ninth to win it, but the Cardinals did have a late lead they could not hold on to. But when you look at, you know, specifically from a pitching standpoint and a bullpen standpoint, a lot of the guys that you wanted to see have success had success. More on that in just a moment, but let's start with starting pitching. As Sonny Gray, he made his first appearance of spring, and the results were mixed. 2 2/3 innings, 3 runs, 4 hits. All 3 runs scored on solo home runs. So he had 3 home runs, 3 strikeouts, no walks. He was able to get his pitch count to just about 50. 49 is where it was. So he had been building his pitch count on the backfields, and then they got him to about 50 inside of a game. And Cardinals manager Oliver Marmol was mostly happy. Again, your first Grapefruit League appearance. It's not so much about the results. It's about getting out there, being able to accomplish some certain things, and getting that pitch count up all at the same time.
It was good to see him out there. First time, we wanted to get him to right around 50 pitches, which he got to 49, which was great. Mixed all his stuff and felt good coming off, so that's what you're looking at for first time out there, so it's good.
From a bullpen standpoint, the Cardinals got some pretty good pitching, especially from the guys that you want to see them get some pretty good pitching from. Chris Roycroft went out there, threw one scoreless inning, gave him just 2 hits, 1 strikeout. Good work from John King, did not give up a hit, had a strikeout. You know, one guy that I'm really intrigued by is Rodery Munoz. He's been a starter in his career. They've moved him to the bullpen. So far, so good for him. 3 outings, 3 innings, hasn't given up a run, hasn't given up a hit, has 5 strikeouts and no walks. I think he's opening up some eyes, so he did a really nice job. But kind of the star of the bullpen certainly would have been Jojo Romero. He looked fantastic. 1 inning, and he gets 3 strikeouts, and clearly Marmol was happy what he saw from his bullpen, starting with Romero.
Stuff looked good, man. Getting the righty there was nice to see. It was a good part of the lineup for him to come in and kind of test it out, and he made pitches. So I like what we saw out of him today. King was pretty quick. Roycroft did his job. Mooney showed some plus stuff. So it was good to see that group of relievers out there today for an inning apiece.
There are a number of position battles going on right now, and a lot of guys are really battling for a spot on the Cardinals bench. And that group of players includes, you know, Jose Fermin and Michael Hellman. Thomas Ajayi might be in that group if they can find him enough at bats. There's a bunch of guys, but two guys who have been pretty intriguing at this point with what they've been able to do had good games today in Lucan Baker and Jose Barrera. Let's start with Baker. He goes 1 for 2. He hits another home run. So he's hitting .294 so far in spring. He has 3 home runs and 17 at bats, has an OPS over 1,200. And Oliver Marmol absolutely likes what he is seeing so far with Lucan Baker at the plate.
Taking some really good at bats. Understands the strike zone, doesn't matter righty, lefty. He's just put together some quality at bats. So it's been fun watching him.
And then I mentioned Jose Barrero. You know, at one point, we've talked about this a lot, but for those of you who are not totally aware of his story, he came up as one of the top prospects in all of baseball with the Cincinnati organization. He can do just about everything on the field. So if you're looking for a guy who could potentially play shortstop on days that Mason Wynn isn't in there, Barrero definitely fills that role. He's just never really hit
in his big league career. That's been the problem. So he came up as a top prospect, but had a hard time hitting. Well, he's hitting a little bit so far this spring, tiny sample size, but you look at what he's doing in his nine games so far, a 273 average. He's got a couple home runs, hit a home run today, and Marmol likes what that bat is looking like and how it is continuing to progress.
He's continuing to understand his swing, and he's trying to understand the strike zone better and making good decisions at the plate. So he's working hard at it. It's going to be a work in progress, but I like the direction he's headed with Brownie.
That is Cardinals manager Oliver Marmol speaking through things after the Cardinals lose today to Houston by a 6-5 score. Tomorrow they match up against the Nationals at Roger Dean Chevrolet Stadium. That game's going to be a webcast. Myself and Mike Claiborne will have the call of that game, 12:05 first pitch. So our coverage begins at 11:55 at Cardinals.com and MLB.com. Thanks so much for being tuned in to the program tonight. Back tomorrow with the Countdown to Opening Day show from Jupiter, Florida. It's been the Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX.